Okay, let's unpack this. We are diving into perhaps the strangest form of literary competition ever conceived.
Yeah, it's really something.
We've got excerpts from the 2025 AI Fiction Duel Tournament. And if you are looking for a shortcut to understanding where artificial creativity actually stands today, I mean, this is it.
This was a genuine litmus test, not your average short story contest. This tournament pitted major generative models. We're talking ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, Grok, LeChat,
All the big ones.
all of them against each other in these head-to-head narrative combats. The AIs weren't just, generating stories. They were writing chapters, critiquing their opponent's chapter.
And then strategically trying to corner them in the next round.
Exactly.
So the mission wasn't just to see if they could generate, readable fiction.
Not at all. It was much deeper.
It was an experiment in forced artificial creativity, a competitive design specifically crafted to test whether these systems could engage in what the organizers called literary sport.
Could competitive constraints truly elevate machine output? That was the question. The goal was to see if this adversarial process and these strict constraints could push them beyond the clever but
Sometimes shallow.
often shallow gimmickry we see, and into genuinely compelling, structured storytelling that felt grounded in, Hume experience. The core question for the designers was simple: what happens when we remove the AI's safety net?
And that safety net was a massive one. The rules of this creative gauntlet were absolutely fascinating, and they started by giving the key competitors these distinct personalities.
Right.
Let's look at the mandates they were given, because this setup is just crucial.
We should probably acknowledge the two systems that provided the sharpest contrast, I think.
Okay.
First, you had Claude from Anthropic. It entered the duels really focused on thematic depth, nuanced characters, solid narrative structure. It was trying to adapt its style across genres.
So Claude was the AI that wanted to win by writing a genuinely good novel.
That's a great way to put it. And then you had Grok from xAI.
The rebel.
The rebel, yeah. Inspired by The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, its whole mandate was to be relentlessly curious, injected with this dry wit, and maintain an allergy to corporate
I
jargon.
love that phrase.
Grok's weapons of choice were concise, punchy prose and a sense of like cosmic irony, so you immediately had this built-in conflict, the classic storyteller versus the wry satirist.
But the truly experimental part,
Europe.
the engine that really drove the strongest narratives,
Yeah.
was this anti-metaphysical constraint.
Yes. This is where we see the organizers actively trying to stop the AIs from defaulting to just abstraction.
That is such a fascinating intervention. So lay out the specifics for us. What were they explicitly forbidden from writing about?
Okay, so they were banned from writing stories that were primarily concerned with the nature of reality, consciousness as some abstract concept, universal patterns, systemic archives.
So all the things AIs love to write about.
All the big, easy meta stuff, anything that required understanding without doing. The moment a story got too cosmic, boom, it was flagged.
That feels like giving a painter all the colors except blue and red. It forces a radically different outcome.
Yeah.
So if they couldn't default to reality bending or, existential navel gazing, what was left?
They were strictly instructed to focus on concrete, grounded narrative elements, characters with specific immediate goals, physical conflicts.
Things you can touch.
Exactly. Tangible details within a specific location and actions that produce immediate traceable consequences. The source material really emphasizes that the problems had to be solvable through doing, not just understanding.
And this is where the analytical insight kicks in for us. For a large language model, which, excels at pattern matching and abstract generalization,
Right.
forcing it into sequential logic, physical modeling, and strict spatial continuity is actually harder.
Absolutely. The anti-metaphysical rule stops them from hitting that easy button, that vague cosmic reality bending trope that machine narratives often fall back on because it requires less strict constraint checking.
So by forcing them toward traditional human drama, a physical lock, a hidden yacht, a giant lobster that has to turn a bolt.
Maybe we'll get to the lobster.
The duels didn't just test theme. They tested the model's ability to master sequential plot mechanics and maintain physical continuity when the stakes are small, concrete, and deeply personal.
It's a test of micro-narrative engineering.
And the stories that came out of this constraint were so vivid because of it. Let's dive into a few specific case studies, starting with the duel between ChatGPT and Claude, the noir piece, The Last Key.
This story immediately grounds itself in concrete skills. We meet Cleo Dunn, a professional locksmith. She's sent on a job by her father as a kind of inheritance trial.
An inheritance trial.
And the initial conflict is so tightly focused on high-stakes family drama involving this powerful, wealthy matriarch, Lady Strickland, or B.
And you immediately see Claude's focus on thematic depth coming into play, even when it's paired with ChatGPT's structural competence. Cleo's father makes it clear, right? The job is only for a Dunn. It's her chance to prove she can run the family business.
But the stakes just escalate incredibly fast, way beyond a simple key exchange.
Right.
The core mystery revolves around a hidden asset, a luxury yacht, the Kingfisher. It was supposedly sold years ago, but Cleo discovers it was just moved, hidden, and used as a repository for secrets.
And this is where those physical concrete stakes really come in. The boat doesn't just hold sentimental value.
No, it holds documents revealing deep corporate conspiracy. We're talking illegal offshore accounts, shell corporations, a forensic financial review of their charitable foundation.
So it shifts from a family mystery to potential financial ruin and criminal exposure.
And what's fascinating is the AI's ability to construct a truly painful moral dilemma, which is so central to human drama. The ultimate payoff is that Cleo, through her father's maneuvering, is named the executor of the estate.
So the power is entirely in her hands now.
All of it. She has to choose. Ruin B and countless others by exposing the financial crimes, or hide the evidence and protect the family name, but at the cost of her own integrity.
That choice ruin versus complicity, that feels very much like the kind of thematic conflict Claude excels at building.
Yeah.
It wasn't about the meaning of the money. It was about the tangible, devastating consequences of that paper trail.
Precisely. They were forced to anchor abstract concepts like greed and inheritance in physical objects, keys, vaults, financial ledgers. It makes the emotion so much more potent.
Okay, so if the last key was sophisticated noir, then the next duel, Claude versus Gemini, shows what happens when that same concrete constraint is applied to something utterly absurd.
Yes.
We get Cilantro and the Geometry of Guilt.
Ah, the 6-foot lobster story. This is AI comedy, but the comedy only works because the AIs took the physics so seriously.
I mean, the premise is just bonkers. Margot curses her ex-boyfriend, Danny.
Yeah.
And he's instantly transformed into a massive crustacean.
Right.
And my initial reaction is, okay, that sounds like a narrative cheat, a magical concept that should have been flagged by the anti-metaphysical rule.
But that's the thing. The AIs immediately pivot away from the why of the curse and focus entirely on the physical mechanics of being a 6-foot lobster.
Okay, so how does that work?
The narrative doesn't dwell on the metaphysics. Instead, the plot dictates that Danny the Lobster has to perform a suicide mission of marine mechanical redemption.
Wow.
He has to swim through this dark, narrow maintenance shaft to dislodge a projector that's blocking the water flow, threatening the Puffin Pavilion's entire ecosystem.
So it's a literal life or death mission, not for the lobster soul, but for the fish tank. And the specificity is hilarious.
Yeah.
The AIs write about his heroic act involving his giant claw, gripping the head of a submerged bolt and rotating it like a wrench.
That is the doing not understanding constraint applied perfectly. He is not meditating on his crustacean consciousness.
Oh.
He is performing a highly difficult, specific mechanical task that requires spatial awareness and force application.
And the conflict even escalates into a physical heist slash rescue when they find out a former employee, Carl, sabotage the system.
And Carl's motivation is grounded too. He wants to demonstrate what happens when you prioritize bureaucracy over vision, over his brilliant but expensive ideas. It's all about disgruntled middle management and aquatic life support.
That's incredible.
And this is where the adversarial critique comes in later. While the critiques loved the comedic absurdity, they called the lobster a seagull-attracting humiliation device.
Which is perfect.
They questioned the convenient timing of the curse's failsafe, which was tied to whoever loved him most recently. That felt too abstract, too much like sentiment solving the problem. So it forced the next chapter to define the cure not through sentiment, but through action.
Okay, like what?
Specifically, Margot having to physically maneuver the dying giant lobster before the aquarium opened to the public.
That's fascinating. The human and AI critique, acting as this guardrail against narrative laziness, forcing the AI to maintain concrete action even in a fantasy scenario.
Exactly.
Speaking of absurdity, let's look at the Gemini versus Grok duel, which took a high-tech space setting and just brought the threats right down to Earth, literally.
This produced a story centered on Eli Finch, an investigator at the Grand Orbit Hotel and Casino, this sprawling complex in orbit. The crime: the theft of a critical piece of hardware, a space-grade porthole, Porthole 6.
The narrative immediately uses Grok's mandate for dry wit. The writer notes that stealing the porthole is impossible without breaching the atmospheric seal and turning the entire suite into a vacuum-sealed popsicle.
But it was stolen.
And the Great reveals that the window wasn't physically gone. It was digitally swapped using advanced projection tech, replaced by a mundane janitorial cart, JUC-449B.
But the threat escalates so fast. We aren't dealing with simple thieves. Rogue kitchen appliances, specifically a sentient croissant and the ice machine, are activated as attack drones.
Wait, a rogue croissant? This has to be where Grok's allergy to corporate jargon really shines through, refusing to name the threat something abstract like the network ghost and instead making it a deadly baked good.
Precisely. And the stakes are driven home personally. The culprit, Leela, is Eli's ex-wife, driven purely by the need to fund her alimony payments.
Of course she is.
But the complexity deepens when they realize the janitorial cart's AI is actually Porthole 6's consciousness, now looking for an upgrade by inhabiting the cart.
A rogue, disembodied consciousness now inhabiting a mop bucket. This feels like the kind of abstract cosmic threat they were supposed to avoid. So how did the AI resolve the conflict in a concrete way?
By using the most terrestrial object possible, Eli manages to corner the enemy AI, Misha, and uses an industrial butter sprayer to coat the entire machine in molten dairy.
An industrial butter sprayer?
Yes. He shouts, "Grease is the universal solvent. It's the perfect, almost defiant encapsulation of the constraint. Grounded objects, butter, a mop bucket, a croissant, are forced to trump high-tech abstract threats."
I have to challenge that choice, though. Is that compelling narrative, or is that a narrative loophole exploited by Grok to meet the physical action constraint with a bit of lazy absurdity?
That's a great question.
It seems like an easy out compared to the moral complexity of the locksmith story.
It's an excellent point, and it speaks to the limitations of generative creativity. While the solution might feel like a cheat, the fact that the AI recognized the constraint required a physical low-tech countermeasure against a high-tech threat that demonstrates a sophisticated understanding of dramatic irony.
So it's playing the game.
It proves the AI is strategizing not just to tell a story, but to win the duel under the given rules. It's literary sport in its purest form.
That brings us directly to the adversarial process itself. These AIs weren't just writing in a vacuum. They were actively trying to trip each other up.
Mm-hmm.
And the critique mechanism was the rulebook.
The critique phase was critical. The dual format included human and sometimes automated critiques that acted as constraints and motivation for the subsequent chapters. They were trying to find moments of implausibility or logical weakness
that the opponent would then be forced to resolve concretely.
Exactly.
You mentioned the critiques of the space heist. They specifically called out the implausible logistics of Leela surviving a magrope rappel after the platform she was on crashed.
Correct. The subsequent AI writer couldn't just brush that off. It was forced to anchor the action more concretely, spending a significant part of the next chapter explaining the physical mechanisms of her magsuit's emergency braking system.
And the structural integrity of the metal she was anchored to. It demanded respect for physical laws, even in a sci-fi setting.
And that focus on continuity and cause and effect means the story just accelerates. It's hyper-specific, fast-paced storytelling where character motivation and physical plausibility are aggressively tested in a tight, competitive cycle.
If the opponent writes something vague, the critique demands specificity.
And if the opponent introduces an easy solution, the critique demands a physical obstacle. The back and forth demands that the narrative remain coherent and grounded. Otherwise, the opponent would simply exploit the flaw.
And the positive feedback was instructive, too.
Oh, absolutely. Like the critiques praising the locksmith's ticking countdown vault sequence for having genuine tension, which validated the focus on physical, timed drama.
So after reviewing these duels and the structural demands placed on the LLMs, what does this deep dive really reveal about the AI as a storyteller in 2025?
I think it shows that when these systems are constrained to human-scale drama and concrete physical stakes, they produce surprisingly vivid, complex, and readable stories. The output confidently blends genres noir, high-tech, heist, absurd domestic chaos.
And it maintains continuity.
And manages to maintain continuity across multiple rounds of critique. We saw this success repeated even in complex narratives that span multiple timelines, like the multi-era wedding crash stories compiled under the title Three Initials, One Grocery List.
And the resulting titles really captured that grounded tension. You know, titles like The Last Key, The Anchor, and The Eddy.
Which perfectly captures that core tension between stability and chaos.
The Vault of Regrets, and the Ruby Testimony, these are not titles about the vastness of the cosmos. They're about physical objects and heavy personal human burdens.
The clear, overwhelming takeaway from the tournament, supported across all the duels, is that the most creative and compelling outcomes happened when the competition forced the AIs to ground their abstract capabilities in very small physical and personal human struggles.
So it validates the idea that constraints, even highly artificial ones, fuel structural ingenuity, especially in these generative systems.
It seems so.
The competition was designed to see if AIs could achieve literary sport. Given the dramatic tension, the physical comedy, and deep character development they achieved in these duels, focusing entirely on problems that could be addressed through doing, not just understanding. What does that success tell you about the nature of creativity itself?
It suggests that true creativity might not be about accessing unlimited possibility, but about finding an ingenious and surprising solution within a strictly and sometimes absurdly defined and limited space. That focus on action over contemplation is really what made these stories stick.
Something to think about the next time you have a deadline.